This is your brain on risk. This is Mind Over Money, the podcast where Kevin Cook exposes the psychology of investing.
Welcome back to Mind Over Money. I'm Kevin Cook, your field guide and storyteller for the fascinating arena of behavioral economics. I love Twitter, not just because it's the fastest place to get news and expert analysis, but more so because it is a portal to just about everything that interests me, all in one place, all easily accessible from my phone. In any given moment, I can be witnessing live posts and interactions from experts across a dozen of what I call communities of knowledge, from science, politics, education, and economics, to nutrition, fitness, psychology, and entrepreneurship. On any given day, I can also find a dozen knowledge rabbit holes to run down. Therein lies some danger in being distracted. But every few weeks brings some new person or source of knowledge that I wonder how I lived without. A couple of weeks ago was no exception, as I found neuroscientist Lisa Feldman Barrett posting her recent book review in Nature of Joseph Ledoux's new work, The Deep History of Ourselves, the 4 billion year story of how we got conscious brains. I had read parts of some older Ledoux books, like The Emotional Brain and Synaptic Self. And this was, 20 years ago. I think The Emotional Brain was 1998 and Synaptic Self was 2002. And he was widely known for his focused laboratory research on fear, using rodents, since, like all mammals, actually all vertebrate brains, they shared a brain structure called the amygdala. Did you know about 40% of all mammal species are rodents? I didn't know that. That's like almost 2,300 species of mammals are rodent species. Amazing. Anyway, back to the amygdala. The amygdala, derived from the Greek word almond, owing to the structure's almond-like shape, performs a primary role in the processing of memory, decision-making, and emotional responses, including fear, anxiety, and aggression. It is located deep in the brain's medial temporal lobe. In a moment, I'm going to read you a passage from Dr. Barrett's book review because something really struck me that I had been wrestling with for years about understanding fear. And that is the fear that animals experience. Another community I frequent on Twitter is anything involving interesting or fun animal behavior. I have two young daughters, and that's something that we can always share, whether it's exotic animals in far-off places or just kittens and puppies being themselves. Last week, I saw an incredible video of a man courageously releasing a wolf from a trap in the wild. I'm sure that guy was afraid, and the wolf probably was too, but this guy somehow managed to hold the wolf's head down with a stick so that he could use one foot and the other hand to release the trap from the wolf's foot. And I think he was pretty confident, like, if I can just get this wolf free, it will probably run away. Obviously, he wasn't taking any chances. He backed off really quick once he got it free, and sure enough, the wolf stood up and ran the other way. Okay, but lately I've noticed a lot of cat attacks and scares off bear videos. I'm serious. Have you seen any of these videos? Maybe on YouTube, or I see them on Twitter. You know, somebody in the North Woods or in Canada, a bear comes up to the house and the house cat chases it off. Funny stuff. But, obviously what it made me think of is, how fearless some animals can seem in combat. You know, and how is this possible that a cat is willing to take on a creature? Maybe it's seen it before or not, but it's, 15 times its size and seems to do it with no fear. All right. Well, Joseph Ledoux, whose name wrongly became synonymous with the idea that the amygdala was the fear center that all animals shared, has been trying to tell us for years what the difference is between animal fear and human fear. All right. Now I'm going to read the section from Dr. Barrett's review of his book, The Deep History of Ourselves, The 4 billion year Story of How We Got Conscious Brains. Ledoux, an academic at New York University in New York City, is best known for his research on fear and for carefully mapping the brain circuit centered on the amygdala, a knot of neurons in the medial temporal lobe. The amygdala, he showed, has a crucial role in non-conscious defensive behavior responses such as freezing or fleeing. His conclusion, based on the assumption that all mammalian amygdala circuits are structurally similar, was that all mammals, including humans, share these responses. He described this work in The Emotional Brain in 1996. All right, I'm going to stop right there for a second. Here's Lisa Feldman Barrett describing Ledoux's early work, where he did seem to make this close association in his 1996 book, The Emotional Brain, between, you know, all mammals have an amygdala, and this is where our freezing or fleeing responses come from. So now back to Dr. Barrett's review here, because it's she's going to show how Ledoux's thought and at least the clarification of his ideas evolved over the next 20 years. In the meantime, the amygdala circuit was referred to as the fear circuit. This became problematic. The mislabeling, Ledoux realized, had fueled a misconception that humans and other mammals share the conscious experience of fear. That is, the feeling of fear, being aware that you're afraid, in other words, not just non-conscious defensive behaviors. In fact, he has long argued that, on evidence, the amygdala circuit is not sufficient and might not be necessary for feeling fear. That role, he suggests, is filled by parts of the prefrontal cortex involved in working memory. To deal with these confusions, Ledoux recast amygdala circuits as survival circuits that give rise to survival-related behaviors such as defense, eating, temperature regulation, and reproduction. And he reserved the term fear only for the conscious experience of fear. This new view was outlined in his book, Anxious, which was published in 2015. Okay, so I just want to review those three paragraphs from Lisa Feldman Barrett, who is also a neuroscientist, and I talked about her book last year. Her 2017 book was called How Emotions Are Made, The Secret Life of the Brain. So obviously she's qualified to take a look at Ledoux's career and life's work. So Ledoux went out of his way to clarify that we can't necessarily attribute to animals the same experience of fear that we have, and that the amygdala certainly shares structural and functional capabilities as a circuit that processes emotion and memories. But human fear is much more involved with working memory and the prefrontal cortex. Okay. I didn't read his 2015 book, Anxious, and I'm really experiencing some anxiety about it. I feel like I'm years behind in understanding emotions and fear. Here's a description of the book Anxious from Amazon. The subtitle is Using the Brain to Understand and Treat Fear and Anxiety. Collectively, anxiety disorders are our most prevalent psychiatric problem, affecting about 40 million adults in the United States. In Anxious, Joseph Ledoux, whose NYU lab has been at the forefront of research efforts to understand and treat fear and anxiety, explains the range of these disorders, their origins, and discoveries that can restore sufferers to normalcy. Ledoux's groundbreaking premise is that we've been thinking about fear and anxiety in the wrong way. These are not innate states waiting to be unleashed from the brain, but experiences that we assemble cognitively. Treatment of these problems must address both their conscious manifestations and underlying non-conscious processes. While knowledge about how the brain works will help us discover new drugs, Ledoux argues that the greatest breakthroughs may come from using brain research to help reshape psychotherapy, a major work on our most pressing mental health issue. Anxious explains the science behind fear and anxiety disorders. All right. And I think the key thing that I was trying to emphasize there is that phrase, the brain, let's see, I'll just read the sentence again. These are not innate states waiting to be unleashed from the brain, but experiences that we assemble cognitively. So that idea of assembling from memory, humans tend to create their own fears. And I think we can all relate to that. When we come back, I'm going to connect all this to what we know about fear in investing and trading. I'll be back faster than you can spell amygdala. Okay, in some program notes, I want to refer back to my last podcast titled Probability 101, How Not to Be a Sucker. I talked about how people lie with stats and how, you know, in our world flooded in data, it's more important than ever for kids to grow up with good science and math education and be able to interpret all the graphs and pretty pictures people throw at us with their data arguments. And one of the things I talked about was how industries like big food can try and sway us. You know, the whole thing about, you remember in the 70s, cholesterol was bad for us and you had to eat margarine instead of butter. And that turned out to be completely false. It turns out the seed oils are terrible for us. And really one of the biggest culprits in heart disease is the amount of sugar in our diet from carbohydrates and, you know, processed foods. But how does, you know, big food from say the dairy industry or any, agricultural industry get involved with research to influence us? Well, just last week in the New York Times, there was a very interesting story on this topic. Here was the title of the NYT article: A Shadowy Industry Group Shapes Food Policy Around the World. And I'll just read the summary is, in India and other countries, an organization funded by food and beverage companies quietly fights restrictions on sugary or processed foods. So they exposed this, and the focus was on India. And I'm going to read the first paragraph to kind of whet your appetite, and then you can go look for the NYT article. It was just last week, so second week of September. When the Indian government bowed to powerful food companies last year and postponed its decision to put red warning labels on unhealthy packaged food, officials also sought to placate critics of the delay by creating an expert panel to review the proposed labeling system, which would have gone far beyond what other countries have done in the battle to combat soaring obesity rates. So it looked like there was this aggressive push in India to label food with red warning labels, unhealthy packaged food. Food companies got the government to back down and delay the warning labels. But they said, you know what, we'll form a committee here of some experts. And you know, so you can imagine what happens there is the expert panel of scientists or not, and paid or not, but probably paid, would produce research supporting their point of view. So I just wanted to share that with you since it came up after How Not to Be a Sucker podcast. All right, so this business of fear is something I've been interested in for a while, not just in animals, but in humans, especially in the trading world, where when people act out of fear, they do really dumb things with their money. I mean, we can be irrational with our money to begin with, but when we're afraid, we often make very bad decisions with our long-term investments. And when it comes to trading, I mean, let's be honest, short-term trading, 99% of people who try it will fail at it. It's really one of the most difficult jobs there is. Now, my father was an airline pilot. When I grew up, he taught me how to fly. And I think being a pilot is a difficult job because of not just the skill set, but the fact that you're responsible for hundreds of people's lives at one time. And so I have high respect for that. And when you learn to be a pilot, you definitely learn to deal with fear and overcome your fears because, you know, you just appreciate the beauty of flying. Surgeons, I would say, have probably the toughest job, you know, the intricacy of their knowledge of the human body and chemistry, and then holding somebody's life in the balance while they perform a time-sensitive maneuver. And I might say, I've often said that trading is the third most difficult job just because it challenges our brains and our emotions in like nothing else, because it puts us in this state where we are constantly second-guessing our decisions and usually doing things that don't lead to long-term success. So I've written extensively about that. If you go to my my Twitter feed, at Kevin B. Cook, right at the top, I have the article for the first podcast I did in 2016, which details my journey in understanding fear in trading, using two sciences, neuroscience, which looks at the brain and behavior from the inside out, and then behavioral finance, from Daniel Kahneman and Richard Thaler and those folks who study us from the outside in. You know, give people a certain challenge, a quiz, an uncertainty puzzle of some sort, a risk puzzle of some sort, and see how they make decisions and see how consistently irrational people can be. One of the neuroscientists I studied here was Antonio Damasio, who wrote a book called The Feeling of What Happens. So what I focus on with traders is not only do you have to be really good at planning and preparation and using a probability-based mindset to make decisions, so you're not making emotional decisions, but you're making mathematically-based decisions, you also have to be aware of yourself as this physical animal with emotions. And so it used to be trading coaches would say you have to completely rid yourself of emotion. You have to be emotionless while you're trading. And that might work for some people, but it's pretty hard to tell anybody to do anything and not have emotions. It would be like, disconnecting part of your brain, and our brains are so interwoven that emotions are often part of mathematical decisions. So there's connections going on there. Because emotion is tied to memory, there could be things that you do with math and decision-making that are tied to emotional memory. So to separate that out is impossible. So what I would tell traders is be aware of your feelings and use them, and know when, if you're feeling very uncomfortable. For instance, an old rule is, hey, if you can't sleep at night because of the trading positions you have on, you probably have on too much risk. You're probably, betting the farm when you shouldn't be. So that's how a lot of this ties into investing in trading for me. And another way is Nassim Nicholas Taleb, who I also talked about in my last podcast, How Not to Be a Sucker, who he has a gripe with the field of psychology. He thinks, as we talked about last time, there is way too much correlation going on and not enough causation with, 90% of psychology studies and research are worthless because of the misuse of statistics and correlations. But he also has a gripe with neuroscience. I'm already to understand how he wants to throw out psychology. But neuroscience, this is some pretty hard science. Now we can, any expert might argue with Ledoux about how he's reached conclusions about fear in animals and humans. When we're doing a brain scan and we're looking at things on multiple levels, for instance, I also want you to, on Twitter, go look up Joseph Ledoux. You can find him at, I believe, I mean, if you just type Joseph Ledoux, and his last name is spelled L-E-D-O-U-X, and he goes by Joseph. His Twitter handle is something like The Amygdaloid. And that's also the name of his band. He has a band he plays in called The Amygdaloids, which is kind of cool. But his Twitter handle, I believe, is at The Amygdaloid. So amygdala, by the way, is spelled A-M-Y-G-D. So that's amygdala. So amygdala is A-M-Y-G-D-A-L-A, amygdala. But amygdaloid, he obviously puts the O-I-D-S on there. Anyway, go through his Facebook, or I'm sorry, his Twitter feed, and I just did this morning. I found a Facebook Live video that he did with, I'm not sure where it was again. It was some institute. The presenter sounded British, but he spoke with Jeffrey Sachs, who is a researcher I know in climate science. I'm not sure what else he does, but Joseph Ledoux opens with a short, like a 10-minute introduction to his book, The Deep History of Ourselves. Just came out a couple of months ago, and I'm gonna have to order it on Amazon. But he opens with like a really quick 10-minute introduction to his work and the new book. And then he sits down with Jeffrey Sachs and they have a dialogue about it. But one of the interesting things he said is, I don't know if you know who Eric Kandel is, K-A-N-D-E-L. He's like the old man of neuroscience. I mean, he's got to be 95 by now. He's been working on some of these problems since the 60s. He said, you know, you come at the brain by identifying three things. First, you want to know what behavior are you trying to explain or narrow down or describe. Next, you find the circuits that are related to that behavior. And often that can be done now with amazing brain imaging technologies. And then third, you look for the cells, cellular functions, and molecules that are involved. And Ledoux says he's basically taken this approach and it led him backwards in time to a billion years ago when some of the first single cell creatures who had, you know, some kind of, they didn't have nervous systems, but they had functional sensory bodies of some sort, you know, that they could interact with their environment and either move towards food or move away from danger. And he, you know, he chronicles the evolution of life from single-celled organisms to complex organisms to us, and what we share in those cells and molecules and obviously the amygdala. So you can right away see, if you don't want to read his book, take a half hour and just watch the beginning of that live stream that they did. Okay, so I want to go to Feldman's 2017 book, How Emotions Are Made, and just read a couple of paragraphs on her section about Ledoux. Now, granted, the book review we read from Nature from this year was on Ledoux's most recent book, and here she is talking in her 2017 book, but it's good to review this. The neuroscientist Joseph E. Ledoux, who popularized the idea of fear learning in his acclaimed book, The Emotional Brain, now argues against us using the term fear altogether when referring to a rat. In taking this stand, he is a scientist of rare intellectual courage. He had published hundreds of papers on so-called fear learning and a popular book on the brain basis of fear in the amygdala, yet he carefully considered the contrary evidence and revised his position. In his revised view, freezing helps keep an animal safe when facing threat. It is a survival behavior. His classic experiments reveal what he now calls a survival circuit that controls freezing behavior, not a mental state like fear. Ledoux's theoretical shift is just another example of the new scientific revolution of the mind and brain, steering the field toward a more scientifically defensible theory of emotion. All right, one more paragraph here, because then we're going to tie this into an idea that now we've just been talking about fear primarily and not, you know, asking the question, well, don't animals have emotions? Doesn't my dog have emotions? All right, back to, and this is page 275 in Lisa Feldman Barrett's How Emotions Are Made. Although Ledoux and other like-minded scientists have made the shift, you can still easily find the mental inference fallacy in YouTube videos and TED Talks by other researchers who study emotion in animals. And the mental inference fallacy, that's anthropomorphism, where we attribute things that we experience, our thoughts and emotions, onto animals. Well, animals, you know, are, my dog must be thinking this, my dog must be feeling that, you know. That's a sort of a tricky slope because you can't really be sure, even though you think you are. All right, so back to the mental inference fallacy in YouTube videos and TED Talks. The speaker shows you a compelling movie or a picture of an animal engaging in some behavior. See how the rat is happy when you tickle it? See how sad the dog is when he whimpers? See how afraid the rat is when she freezes? But remember, emotions are not observed, they are constructed. When you watch the video, you have no awareness that you're using conceptual knowledge to make an inference, any more than you were aware of the processes that turned random blobs into a bee in chapter 2. She's obviously talking about chapter 2 of her book here. So to you, it seems like the animal is emotional. Now, this brings up an interesting point because I'm actually reading a book, right? I haven't gotten Ledoux's new book. I'm reading another 2019 book by Frans de Waal. Frans de Waal is a Dutch-American scientist who studied, so when he was in college, he studied a colony of chimpanzees in the Netherlands in a zoo. I forget the name of the zoo. But he studied this colony for many, many years. And then now he's at a primatology research center down in Georgia, which I've also forgotten the name of. But his book is all about, you know, animal emotions. It's called Mama's Last Hug. And Mama was a chimpanzee in the ape colony that he studied in the Netherlands. So he's, you know, very focused on studying what types of emotions and experiences do animals have. Obviously, with chimpanzees was a great place to start because they have such a rich social experience and, you know, language, communication, I wouldn't call it culture, but definitely a rich social life. All right. Fast forward back to Feldman reviewing Ledoux's book. This paragraph's pretty important. For example, many scientists still assume that emotions are a legacy of some ancient mammalian ancestor and that they lurk in subcortical circuitry, which has supposedly remained largely unchanged by evolution. Ledoux explains how this view leads otherwise gifted researchers to wrongly believe that when humans and non-human animals perform similar actions, these are accompanied by similar feelings, the same anthropomorphism that led him to redraw the map of fear. Ledoux concludes that such magical thinking has interfered with the search for medications to treat anxiety disorders, which now affect a record high of hundreds of millions of people globally. All right, and I'm not sure what work Ledoux does with patients in treating anxiety. Obviously, he believes that for some people, a medical, a pharmacological solution works best. But it seems like he also believes in some sort of cognitive behavior therapy, because if people built up fears based on memories and the way they think, they might be able to undo some of that. All right. Hope you enjoyed this short discussion today on all things related to fear. In the article version of this podcast that will appear on the Zacks.com website, I'll have links. I'll link to the Ledoux live stream, which you should definitely take, you know, watch the first 20 minutes of, and the titles of all these books, too. All right. Thanks for joining me. We'll talk to you soon.
This material is being provided for informational purposes only, and nothing herein constitutes investment, legal, accounting, or tax advice, or a recommendation to buy, sell, or hold a security. Do not act or rely upon the information and advice given in this podcast without seeking the services of competent and professional legal, tax, or accounting counsel. Publication and distribution of this podcast is not intended to create, and the information contained herein does not constitute, an attorney-client relationship. No recommendation or advice is being given as to whether any investment or strategy is suitable for a particular investor. It should not be assumed that any investments in securities, companies, sectors, or markets identified and described were or will be profitable. All information is current as of the date herein and is subject to change without notice. Any views or opinions expressed may not reflect those of Zacks Investment Research as a whole.